Hello and welcome to the Majlis, Ready for Your Radio Liberty's Current Affairs podcast focusing on Central Asia. I am Mohammed Tahir, the host of the Majlis and Ready for Your Radio Liberty's media manager for South and Central Asia here in Washington, D.C. So we are here to talk about a developing story involving thousands of students from Uzbekistan. Details are anecdotal, but what is known is Uzbek authorities are recalling thousands of students studying at the universities in neighboring countries in Central Asia, interestingly in the middle of the academic year, and more interestingly, the decision is so abrupt. So there are so many questions about this move as to why the authorities are doing this. What is the nature and the logic behind it? What would be the implications of this move? As we speak, it's happening, so we also abruptly decided to switch the topic for this week to make sense of this development, and hopefully the panel will bring some clarity on what is going on and what it means. So let's get into that. To discuss all these, I'm joined by Alisher Siddiq, the director of RFERL's Uzbek service, Toro Kuldurov, the director of RFERL's Kazakh service, Bruce Panier, editor of RFERL's Central Asia blog, Kishlok Awazi. Thank you, colleagues, for joining us in the last minute. So let's start, Alisher, with you. So the possible reasons, it's a big topic. Let's leave that for later. So now, tell us, please, what is going on with these students? Okay, I think Alisher is caught up in something, but maybe, Bruce, you would like to start?
Yeah, in what seems like a sudden move, the Uzbek government decided to recall a lot of its students studying universities in neighboring Central Asian countries. It's kind of a bizarre move, but it affects, probably tens of thousands of students. And the strange thing is they want them to come leave those universities they're in at places like Tajikistan and Kazakhstan and come home right now and pick up the academic year where they are. At least first-year students. But there's this problem of you need the right documents. They're essentially transferring from one university to the other right in the middle of the coursework.
So are we talking about only the first-year students now?
As far as I could tell from what I've seen, it's the first-year students that have to come home now, and the second- and third-year students can finish this term until the summer, and then after that they have to come home at summer and finish their education in Uzbek universities.
So this impacts all students then, in this or their way?
Eventually, yes. All students studying in, like I said, neighboring countries in Central Asia, it appears. I haven't seen anything specifically about Kyrgyzstan yet, but I assume I've heard that's also true there. But I have seen Tajikistan and Kazakhstan. Like I said, in Kazakhstan's case, as Toroku would be able to tell you, just in Chimkent alone, in one of the provinces, oblasts of Kazakhstan, there's like 15,000 Uzbek students at universities.
Yeah, that's true. And it is not only just one of the regions of Kazakhstan, but this is a region bordering with Uzbekistan, South Kazakhstan region and Chimkent city. What we heard from our reporter there yesterday, she visited about three universities out of 10 in Chimkent, and in all of these three universities, she saw, if not thousands, then hundreds of students standing in queues waiting for their papers from university authorities. And what she found out, about 15,000 students are studying only in Chimkent universities. And what we know, there is also Turkestan University. There are two different universities are located there. This is Kazakh Turk University and Sirdarya University. According to the Uzbek diaspora people in southern Kazakhstan, there are also some students, but we don't have information about them. So overall, the situation with rush and preparation of the documents for transfer just showed unexpected situation. And I think neither authorities in Tashkent nor universities in neighboring countries were not ready for this. And the head, one of the heads of South Kazakhstan University, the deputy head of the school, Sadıkbek Beysenbayev, told us that they were not ready. They didn't expect this. There were about thousands of students demanding for their papers.
That's very interesting. Alisher, are you with us now?
Yes, I'm here.
Okay, so we were talking about, there are 15,000 students from one specific region of Kazakhstan are the ones affected by this. And yesterday, there were news like thousands of Uzbekistani students in Tajikistan also were lining up in front of the Tajik University. So how many students are we talking about now, the ones who are affected by this?
Our estimates, based on numerous sources and information from these three countries, suggest that we might be talking about at least 25,000 students willing to return to Uzbekistan.
Are willing to return to Uzbekistan or called back to come to Uzbekistan?
Let's put it this way. I mean, there are talks that are being called back or pulled out of these neighboring countries, which is not completely correct because basically the government just offered to come back, and the rest is the will of the students. And it shows that these thousands of students see more prospects for themselves and see more benefits for themselves to continue studying in their hometowns. So there are, of course, reasons for that, because Uzbekistan basically does not accept diplomas from neighboring countries. I mean, they generally don't accept, you know, diplomas, and you need to go through the complicated process of so-called nostrification, and they call it in the local language. But in general, this was kind of abrupt, was unexpected completely. And as Torakul said, completely agree that it actually caught many people in surprise.
Yeah.
Why would Uzbek government made such a sudden move? But
I mean,
you are saying
that it's a voluntary. I mean, if students in Tajikistan don't like to come back, so they are totally free, independent, not to come back on their decision. Like, there is nothing compulsory, the way you are explaining.
Absolutely not compulsory at this point. On the contrary, the students that we talk to, they're willing to come back. They're complaining about the university they are studying now, that they're complicating their paper process and not so much willingly let them go back.
So, Bruce, is it the way you understand the story, how it's developing?
Well, you know, I was watching some of the videos that are on the Uzbek site, but also I think came from Nastasha, but I mean the current time program. And there was a couple students that seemed to be not very happy. I mean, one person mentioned it was more expensive to study in Uzbekistan than Tajikistan, for instance. So they wanted to stay there. And you know, other people, there was the problem about dorm rooms and things like that people have essentially rented, you know, for the whole term for the year. So they had a place to stay while they were studying. You know, what happens with that to that, those rooms and the money that they spent on these kind of things. So it's, you know, whether they're willingly going back or not, they had settled at these universities and were ready to finish out the school year, and they're being uprooted in the middle of the term and going back or being asked to come back or they want to. So it's not, certainly not the best situation for getting an education, I would think.
Torakul, is there anything you would like to add in this moment?
In yesterday's our report from Shaked, what I noticed, one of students was telling that they received kind of an order to return home. That was interesting. And even though I think overall the absence of clear information about the intention of this kind of calling or invitation back home creates different rumors, and probably students are in a very difficult situation, because overall the situation, how it looks now in front of universities, also show, maybe proves that, because some students were saying that they have been queuing for several days despite the rain and cold, and the university administration told our reporters that they are writing up to 1,000 letters a day for Uzbek students willing to transfer. Why? Why is they so in rush? That's a big question. And why it was first up to, if I'm not mistaken, 15th of February, then they prolonged that for 1 month, opportunity to transfer. Yeah. Why they're doing it in so surprisingly announcing about it and without clear explanation of the intention.
So, Alisher, there is certainly a confusion here. I mean, what you are saying, citing authorities, and what the students understood from this message, that doesn't match. Like, students, some of them at least, received that call or that message as an order. And what you are saying is that is totally a sort of suggestion by the Uzbek authorities. So where this confusion comes from? So who said what here? And why we have this discussion?
I don't know. I don't think there's any confusion with that. You know, studying for many students, for their parents, studying in their hometowns is more comfortable and convenient choice. However, under Karimov's time, under Karimov's regime, and the taking into the account that the amount of, you know, the number of youth in Uzbekistan, Uzbek universities could not accommodate so many students in Uzbekistan. Entering university in Uzbekistan is extremely difficult, corrupt process. You know, you have 8-15 people competing for one place. So that's why basically these students were squeezed out from the country to neighboring country where there's an opportunity for them, and a lot of private universities were set up in some cases, especially to serve the needs of Uzbek students. You know, this kind of a completely changed that, and it gives them opportunity to go back where they would originally be more comfortable. You know, that's why it's just a simple offer to come back created such a hysteria and the rush, because most of them think if they cannot do it within 1 month, they will never be able to do that. Mm. So it's like it's a rush on the student side, and it's a push for that. And I said, there's a very objective reasons why you want to study in Uzbekistan. Definitely. Because studying in Uzbekistan means you get Uzbek diploma, and employment is much easier with Uzbek diplomas in Uzbekistan.
Yeah, and also you don't have to go through notarization of your documents. Yeah. That's another element to that. But then why the authorities are saying that, there's a deadline of this offer, right? February 15?
Yeah, they extended it to March 15 now because of they realized they could not, nobody can do that. That can be extended further, I think. Even some people suggest that the process might take even much longer than they think. Probably this is the first benchmark where the documentation process would kick in. And then how long would it take for the universities in neighboring countries to release students? I mean, that's another big question.
Okay. So, Bruce and Torkel, are we clear now what is really going on here?
Well, for me, I'm still not entirely clear. The problem I have is what the rush is for all this. I mean, I can understand where maybe the Uzbek government thought that it's better for their own citizens to study in Uzbekistan for some reason. But, you know, you see these videos of people in line, you know, it looks like the bus station or something. Mm-hmm. Everyone trying to get tickets where they're trying to get their documents so that they can get over to Uzbekistan. And if they were going to do this, you know, I mean, the announcement just came and there seems to be all this frantic activity to get things back. It would have been made more sense to say, you know, as of the next school year, you know, meaning like September, this is going to start. So I don't see what the rush is here. That's what kind of bothers me.
The rush is a really interesting moment here. I mean, basically, the government offers a bit silly explanation for the rush. Mm-hmm. They say, because we received numerous complaints from students that the process of legalizing their foreign diplomas in Uzbekistan was so complicated, we decided to do that. But the solution for that could be to ease the process of legalizing the diplomas instead of going through the whole education process. So, of course, the explanation from the government side for the rush looks a little silly. So that's why some experts suggest there could be some security concerns. Usually in Uzbekistan, whenever something is done in a hasty manner, that is kind of there's a security element there. So we have covered several months ago a secret document by the Mirziyoyev government how to tackle the radicalization of inside Uzbekistan. And one of the points was to work with students. So that might be, you know, this element where someone could provide present with the information that students in the neighboring countries either radicalizing or more like exposed to free internet, to different free practicing of their religions, which is not the case in Uzbekistan.
Mm. Does that make sense, Torkel Bruce?
Yeah, that's exactly what I'm saying, is that, you know, absence of clear explanation or information creates or opens ways to create different speculations about what might stand behind this kind of invitation. But today, finally, we got some answer from the Ministry of Foreign Affairs. They told us that Uzbek side explained this decision with reforming of education system and saying that there are more and more conditions and opportunities for local students are being created, new grants, and that is why now they can accommodate their own students. That sounded a little bit weird, taking into account how fast and in rush is this all process is going on, but still it was kind of official explanation from Kazakh side.
So speaking of the accommodation, let's talk about that, Alisher. I just read a kind of news story from our friend Emma Sabzaliba, in which she was saying something like in 2019, 1 million school leavers competed for 150,000 places at universities. There's a huge gap there. I mean, is Uzbekistan really ready to accommodate all those students who would come back?
Right. I mean, just to go back a little bit to the reforms, that's absolutely true that President Mirziyoyev's government has been talking about reforms, and the reforms are like that. You know, basically, the situation under Karimov where students would not be able to accommodate it inside the country. You know, that according to these new reforms should change. Of course, reforms is not overnight. It's not, you know, for tomorrow. It's supposed to be a long-term kind of a process. But, you know, basically the assumption on Uzbek side to look at students as a commodity, basically, because they pay for their studies and it's a business, right? I mean, why not? Why can't we do this business inside Uzbekistan and let neighboring countries profit from educating our youth? So that is the kind of a reform part of it.
But
how can they accommodate now without preparation, without sort of without creating a long-term capacity to accommodate students? And now we see from the steps they're taking that it's actually not very much thought out. Basically, what they're doing, universities are renting additional space now. And that would not also be enough. That's why they're introducing afternoon shifts for students. And on the top of it, they also will have a distance learning. Kind of they making this combination of things to be able to swallow this 25,000 students. But again, the question about how many, whether they have enough professors, what would be the quality of studies after all, that is not well explained. And so that reform is sort of a dragging behind yet. And of course, throughout this year, we will see different ramifications of this decision for students, for universities in Uzbekistan, and even possibly for the Uzbek government.
You know, what I'm thinking when you're talking, Alisher, like when I was back in Prague as the head of the Turkmen service there, we did an education project. You know, it started from a very innocent news story, like it was a end of the academic year, and we decided to write a story about this, in fact. And then we found out during the process that in that specific year, 110,000 students were graduated from high schools, and there were only 6,000 or 7,000 places at the universities. It looks like the same thing here to me. Like in 2019, according to the story by our friend Sabzaliba, there were like 1 million Uzbek students graduated from high school, and there are only 150,000 places at the universities. So in Turkmenistan's case, what was the chain problem was, then you would open a door for a huge corruption because there's a huge competition for university. There's just very few places and lots of demand. So are we kind of getting into that direction here? I mean, once they are in Uzbekistan, then what are the scenarios you can imagine they will resume their academic life? What kind of challenges are they going to face?
In fact, Uzbek government is saying that all these changes and reforms are directed towards eradication of corruption in the system. The way higher education works in Uzbekistan and probably in the whole Central Asia, the only thing you need is to enter university, but the graduating is more like automatic process, you know, because of corruption, because of bad education system. So entering basically means that you already have higher education, like diploma. And that was always a big issue in that sense. So all of these people who finally will be transferred to Uzbek universities, they will get some sort of diplomas, right? Papers. But of course, the level of the education and that would remain the same, pretty much the same. You know, you don't expect too much from Uzbek higher education.
And of course,
I think this is really important question. What will be next? If we are talking about Kazakhstan part, Kazakhstan is actually majority of students, Uzbek students in Central Asian countries are located in Kazakhstan. I think there is an understanding in local universities in Shymkent that those students who are trying to get transferred now to Uzbekistan might come back. That is why yesterday university authorities told our reporters that they're still keeping their doors open for Uzbek students who might change their mind. And they said they can come back to Shymkent and continue their studies if Uzbek universities can't accept them for some reason. So, you know, this is, I think, very important question because we are talking about tens of thousands of people.
Yeah.
Right. But again, for the long term, how it will look like is that Uzbekistan is moving towards allowing to establish private universities, which is not the case now. We don't have private universities except very few, like couple even. So not many, very much affiliations of international universities. So again, just to reiterate, they might be moving towards the commercialization of higher education as it is in the neighboring republics, in Shymkent city or in Osh. It's all private universities that Uzbekistan simply doesn't have. And for the future, again, these universities, private universities at least, would be competing between each other and possibly offering, I mean, maybe neighboring countries would offer less payment for studies or better studies or something. So it's just for the long term, it opens the way for this competition. And at this point, the only way possibly to keep Uzbek students in their universities is to offer them some huge, like, I don't know, discounts or some free of charge study, something like this. Otherwise, the offer is very attractive to go back home. Yeah, so that's much attractive than to stay in the neighboring countries.
Of course, those things will happen when Uzbekistan is ready for that. But as you say, Alisher, capacity is not ready at the moment. And so the short term is kind of looks bleak to me. But of course, the one big question is, in a situation like this, what would be the implication of this decision in short term? Let's continue the Majlis podcast talking about these and many other questions very shortly. First, let me recap the debate that today on the Majlis podcast. I'm joined by Alisher Sadiq, the director of RFERL's Uzbek service, Torakul Dorov, the director of RFERL's Kazakh service, and Bruce Vanier, editor of RFERL's Central Asia blog, Kishlak Awazi. I'm Mohammed Tahir, host of the Majlis podcast here in Washington, D.C., and we are discussing Uzbekistan's decision, some say, calling back its students from universities in neighboring Central Asian countries. So about the, before you leave, just the one final thing from you, Torakul. I mean, is there any reaction from Kazakhstan, from Kazakh universities, Torakul, to this decision?
Yes, before we heard from Kazakh authorities that it will not have any impact to local universities or Kazakhstan. It was, if I'm not mistaken, from the Ministry of Education. But, you know, this is very difficult to tell now what kind of impact it will have to universities, because these universities are mainly commercial universities, private universities. And of course, there are a big part of students who are working, who are studying in state universities. But I think it is a little bit early to say how much, for example, income will lose those universities from this process. But talking about Shymkent fees or tuition for study at Shymkent universities, I talked to our correspondent and she said it costs about $400-$500 dollars annually.
That's what I saw on the website. I was just checking it
for. This is about distance learning. For distance learning.
Okay. Terrific. Thank you very much, Torkel. So, Alisher, we are just talking about these universities in Central Asia, not the ones in Russia, not the ones in the West, right?
Exactly so. And that is actually one of the reasons why this suggestion, like analysis, that it might be connected with the security situation. For example, students in Ukraine, they wrote us, how about us? I mean, we would also want to go back to Uzbekistan or in Russia or elsewhere. But no, I mean, it's just for students in the neighboring countries.
The accreditation process of the diplomas from Central Asia, is it different than the one who might be obtained from Ukraine, for instance, in Uzbekistan?
No, everything is the same, you know, absolutely the same.
That's very interesting. Bruce?
You know, I don't know. They were, I mean, I've heard stories saying that even on the Uzbek side, they're not sure that all the credits would transfer from some of these universities into Uzbekistan's university system because of different standards. So, I really couldn't say because I'm not sure what those standards are. But you would think that certainly it's going to be a complicated bureaucratic process to say that your coursework, you know, and this subject in Tajikistan or Kazakhstan is absolutely the equivalent of what you would have received in Uzbekistan. Or if it's not up to Uzbek standards, then where does that leave the student who is studying abroad? Do they have to take the course over?
That's definitely one important question that you are raising, Bruce. The other thing I had in mind is in terms of maybe there is a bigger story behind this. I mean, what Alisher is saying, that the accreditation process of the diplomas obtained from Central Asian universities have to go through the same process with the ones who are obtained from Ukraine. But you are now talking about only students in Central Asian universities are coming back. It doesn't apply to students in Ukraine and Belarus, some other countries. I mean, what is this really? I mean, what is this about?
Well, you know, I mean, that is the big question here, what it's about. And you know, sadly, since we have so little information about what prompted this, you know, I mean, we've heard what the Uzbek government wants them to come back because they think they'll get a better education at home. But, you know, unfortunately, the historical precedent we have for this, when it's happened before in Central Asia, was always for a different reason. And Ali Shir would remember that they recalled a bunch of students, Uzbek students from Turkey in the late 1990s.
Yeah.
That was because they were all going to Nurchilar schools, now Gulenist.
Yeah.
So, you know, you could see why they were recalling those specific students. Tajikistan did the same thing with their religious students. They recalled them from all the madrasas outside of Tajikistan where they were studying, Egypt, Saudi Arabia, Pakistan. You know, and we understood why they were doing it is because they didn't want them learning Islam in those countries. They would prefer that they were learning, taking the courses in Tajikistan. You know, and on that same note, I would mention that Kazakhstan won't appoint imams that studied outside the country anymore either. Madrasas, you have to have studied at a madrasa in Kazakhstan. So now these things might not be related at all to why the Uzbek government is asking its students to come home right now. But unfortunately, those are the previous examples that we have. So, you know, when you hear the Uzbek government saying everyone come home, you wonder why exactly are they doing this? Is there something they don't want their people to be learning over there, you know, in neighboring countries? Are they that skeptical of the education systems in neighboring countries? I wouldn't think that the education system in Kazakhstan would be so inferior to Uzbekistan, actually. So that one's a puzzler. You know, it's hard for me to figure out exactly what is going on here. But, you know, that explanation of just come home and, you know, study here in our Uzbek schools.
And just come home only from the universities in Central Asia, not Ukraine or any. I'm not sure if the studies in Ukraine are any better than the ones in Kazakhstan. I don't know. Okay, so I think we covered lots of ground here. Is there anything I'm missing? Alisher, is there?
You know, Alisher.
No, no. I think you know, if you are in Mirziyoyev's kind of a skin, and then you know that the guy once openly stated about the need for money from elsewhere. You know, if students are the commodity that brings you additional funds to your system, educational system, that's one thing. If you are an authoritarian ruler who is afraid of Islamization, you know, radicalization, which is not so much away from the truth, right? I mean, if you're a student, Uzbek student in Osh, what's the level of your exposure to any type of preaching, you know? And if you compare that with a student in Uzbekistan, it's like a completely different level. So possibly they have some information about student group, which I'm just purely speculating. Instead of focusing on one country, bringing back students from one country, not to make it look political, they just offer to all three countries. Basically, kind of maybe Tajikistan is a victim here, you know, in this sense. So that's just a pure speculation. And then the speculation comes from why it is such a rush for this. But in general, yes, President Mirziyoyev, you know, held these government sessions on higher education. They're talking about eradication of corruption from the system. They're talking about private universities. So all these talks are there. If this decision is logical from one side, it's just not logical from the way it is being implemented, of course. And then looking from the, let's say, Western perspective, you know, in the United States, you have states that want to keep youth and labor in future, and then they offer free education for people in the same state. I mean, if you're in the same state, you pay less or nothing.
Yeah, less.
So less. Yeah, true. And that's the way of keeping these, you know, students. And for Uzbekistan, that could not keep its students. Possibly they thought it's an embarrassing moment and they want to change it. So that's another like reading into the situation.
So, Bruce, I don't know. I mean, maybe the authorities in Central Asian countries know more than what we know. We are just, trying to read, what's that, the expression in English, trying to read the tea leaves of,
yes.
Yeah. So maybe they know more than what we know. But whatever the explanation the Central Asian authorities are provided by the Uzbek authorities behind this decision, we were just witnessing there is some kind of tie between Uzbekistan and the neighboring countries. Do you think it might have some kind of regional implication in terms of their relations, state-to-state relations here?
Well, that's tough to say if it would have an impact on relations between governments. I mean, it certainly will have an impact on relations between the peoples. You know, in a region that's more and more becoming nationalistic, pretty much all those countries, it's probably a good thing that students from neighboring countries are studying, you know, in different places in the region, so that, you know, it helps to break the ice and keep connections going between different the peoples of the different countries. So from that point of view, you'd have to say that this is not a good thing that's happening. And then there's a lot of questions about what's still going on, but I guess I'll leave it at that really. You know, it's probably good that Uzbeks are studying in Kazakhstan and Tajikistan and Kyrgyzstan, and that people from those three countries can come to Uzbekistan and study, hopefully, too, so that they keep connections with each other, links between the countries. And I think it's kind of a shame that they're breaking that down. You know, hopefully not totally, but even this, you know, again, we're talking about 25,000 students. It's a lot of students.
Yeah, it is. I think we also need to wrap up the discussion here. It's been like 40 minutes already. So just to wrap up, Alisher. So, you know, there are lots of questions that we just don't know answer to that. So where your eyes will be going forward to understand what is really going on here and what kind of implications should be expected from this decision?
The implications is the... is again a lot. It's going to be a lot of complaints from students about the conditions, about the lack of lectures, and you know, all this stuff might come. But in general, again, Uzbekistan never offered good conditions in the first place. That's why students left. You know, so we'll see how they can turn that things around. And basically it will be like equal opportunity for students to choose between Uzbekistan and Kazakhstan, you know, rather than favoring one because of another place is just sucks, right? As it was. So, I mean, Uzbekistan was not possible to do. And then they go to Kazakhstan because of, it's like a forced type of decision to go to Kazakhstan. Because, you know, Shymkent is no better than like Karshi, like, right? I mean, in general. Yeah. So, and being near to your home is, of course, something that is always looks more attractive for Uzbeks. I don't know. We'll see. I mean, I don't think that the governments will start fight over it because, again, we're talking about private sector in general in these countries. I think basically the explanations from all sides are just formality.
Hmm.
So, and the true reasons will come later.
Speaking of true reasons, Bruce, so where your eyes will be to understand what just happened here?
Well, you know, there's the thing that I keep coming back to all the time is I'm trying to figure out where we're going with this. Is this going to be something along the lines of Nazarbayev University in Kazakhstan, where their ultimate plan is to bring in outside professors and raise the level of academia in certain universities across Uzbekistan and bring that up? Because, you know, Nazarbayev University is actually a prestigious place to go. They offer a quality education. Or is it? Are we looking at the other side of it, where it's more like a Turkmen university, where you get an education, but it's also, you know, there's a dose of patriotism that's dumped in on top of this to make sure that the students are not only educated, but they also are understand that they're loyal to the state for their education. So it'd probably be somewhere in between, but I'll be looking to see if it leans one way or the other in the future here.
Okay. Well, it was great to talk about these issues as a family. Thank you very much, Alisher, the director of RFRL's Uzbek service, Torokul, the director of RFRL's Kazakh service, Bruce Panier, editor of RFRL's Central Asia blog, Kishlok Awazi. Thank you, colleagues, for your time today.
Thank you.
And this is it from me, Mohammed Tahir, host of the Majlis RFRL Central Asia podcast. Until next week, bye-bye.